Welcome.
Dan Levitard, if we're really being honest about it, it's just a giant piece of shit.
To the Big Suey.
Bald Eagles.
A podcast exclusive that none of our bosses asked for.
More sports.
More work. Less pay.
I haven't stopped talking in a month. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Just when you thought the show couldn't be more diluted. Bam.
Last time I listened to this show.
I haven't listened for years.
Now here's the marching band to nowhere.
Am I missing something? What am I missing?
The end of the story.
Fat face.
Chris Fallick.
It's Felica. You made him a penis.
And the habitual liar.
I didn't ask for any of it.
You asked for all of it.
The Big Suey.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
Billy Gill, what are you eating? Is that a donut? Whatever it is you're eating looks delicious. It looks filled with carbohydrates. I wanted to talk to you about the Die Hard commercial that you believe to be the best commercial in the history of commercials. Mm. I'm sure that doesn't have anything to do with how much money Advance Auto Parts is spending on our show.
Don't give me any money. I don't care.
Because I can't talk to you, though, because you're eating vigorously. So what is it that you're consuming?
It's a piece of French bread with butter. It's filled with butter. Is butter a carbohydrate? Because if it is, then it's filled with carbohydrates. And then I also have a little Cinnamon Toast Crunch over here, CTC.
Right.
And then I have
Wow.
Billy. Yeah,
I have a little Sunny
what
D.
What a spread.
Bill, that
well, it's not. It's really everything that's just left. I've eaten all the other stuff. So that's why I'm kind of had to, you know, make this you know, this little breakfast that I have going on here.
I have a French bread with cereal. I mean, with butter. I mean, you're mixing and matching meals, it seems like.
What do you mean?
Who has French bread with butter in the morning? I mean,
I think to bring back something we talked about last week with my dad, that Billy did, what Billy did is what Greg calls a catch-as-catch-can breakfast. Just whatever you got around the house.
There you go.
Boom, breakfast.
But I would also say that Cubans do, and I don't know whether you dip your bread in your coffee, but that's a fairly normal thing for Cubans to do, to dip that kind of bread in a coffee. Right, Tony?
Yeah, I was just about to say, Dan, where in the world, right, besides Miami and other places that have large Cuban populations, have bread with butter for breakfast? Like, that's a normal thing.
No, toast is not that crazy.
No, but not regular white toast.
Right.
I'm talking about like a French bread or like a Cuban bread, like a slab this big of bread for breakfast. I was talking to my wife on Saturday because I had brought her una tostada with a bunch of little pastelitos and stuff. And I was like, you can't be upset, you can't be sad having Cuban toast. Like, that's one of the biggest comfort foods for me, I think, ever.
This leads us to a nice segue here. Yes, Greg, before I get to it.
I was just going to mention that I'm in love with Cuban toast. I used to eat it every single morning back in the Miami Herald cafeteria with my coffee.
Would you dip buttery toast in your coffee?
I would not. No, I would not. I would just eat the toast separately. And then chase it with coffee, but man, that was good.
It seems like
that's more of a café con leche thing. Like that, you're dipping it in coffee and milk. I'm not a big café con leche guy.
It seems like a waste of butter. I got to be honest with you. Like the coffee on bread cannot be good when it has butter on it. I understand maybe if the bread is dry and you want to soak
he's
it.
He's clearly never had what we're talking about.
Have a Hostess coffee.
That's fine,
cake.
But I mean, you are speaking ignorantly about something you haven't had that Tony, Billy, and Mike and I would swear by.
It doesn't sound good. I mean,
when has butter ever ruined anything? Put that on the poll, Billy.
Yeah, but no, but butter can be ruined by coffee, Chris. Okay? That's all I'm maintaining.
Right.
People put butter in coffee.
That's right. People do that right now. But beyond that, though, that's fine, Stugatz. You're doing it coffee the right way, and everyone else is doing it wrong.
I'm
understand.
Not saying that.
Well, I mean, you are saying that you don't know anything about what we're talking about, but we're wrong.
You are
saying that you haven't tried this, but we are wrong who grew up around it in a lifetime of it.
I'm trying to ask you guys. I'm asking. I want you to broaden my horizons. Perhaps my
but
mind is open
you
to this.
You don't want them broadened. No, your mind is always closed. You already ripped this, and we should go get it for you. I'm going to go get it for you during the break. I'm going to bring it back here, and you're going to find it delicious.
But I just, all I'm asking, I could be wrong, I'm just asking, I imagine buttered toast dipped into coffee doesn't taste that good. That's
Billy,
all I'm
Billy
saying.
Billy made an important correction when he said café con leche, which is sort of, it's a different thing. It's not just coffee the way that you're thinking of it. Okay. It's almost like, it's practically a milkshake is what café con leche is. So anyways, the thing that I wanted to segue into, though, because there are so many things like this that Miami Cubans know about, but others don't. The South Beach session today is with Billy Corbin. He's got an HBO movie coming out tomorrow, I believe, 537 votes. It's fascinating for a number of different reasons. If you liked the U, Cocaine Cowboys, and you sort of want to remember and think about a time in 2000 that foretold everything that's happening in America right now through the Miami-Cuba prism. If you're curious, what the hell is Jorge Masvidal doing? Like, what's he doing with Trump? If you want to understand why it is that that affiliation is important to him and how batshit crazy some Miami-Cubans can be about protecting and wanting to protect their freedoms blindly because they have post-traumatic stress disorder from everything that happened in Cuba and the race divisions that created what ended up becoming Fidel Castro in charge. Like, we've talked to Masvidal about this in a South Beach session. It did not go well. I was not proud of what happened there. I don't know how to handle the situation with Masvidal as it relates to this show, because I believe what he's doing is dangerous. But if you want to understand it better, Billy Corbin is making a movie about all of it. And that movie comes out tomorrow on HBO. And I think it'll do a better job of explaining it to you than I've done, because this is a source of much division in the Cuban community between generations. Masvidal's thing, and you have to understand, Masvidal comes from the streets. Like, he is literally from the streets. This guy probably can't believe that he's sitting here when he fought in the streets, Stugatz, to make it where he is. He probably can't believe that he's sitting there wearing the second Scarface suit, ill-fitting because he's got to go up and down right. And wait so much, while campaigning with the president. But the president is using him as a tool, a propaganda tool, the way that Castro used his sports teams as propaganda tools. And Trump can't find many people, so here he goes into the realm of ESPN Plus and the UFC to go grab the Dana Whites and the Colby Covingtons and the Jorge Masvidals. Usman is also a MAGA guy. And so what you have happening right now is a division in the Cuban community, but I'm in the minority, Stugatz. The Cuban community sides with the things Masvidal is doing because so much of this has been handed down from their elders. And that's what he was explaining. He was explaining that his elders have been subject to how it is that communism rises, how it is that freedom is lost. And so I don't understand, even coming from the same sort of place that he comes from, even though I didn't come from the streets, but I grew up on government cheese, man. I grew up with my family fighting for everything they could, and my father happened to send me to school. But I get what it is that's happening with Miami Cubans. I can't imagine that America gets it at all, that Miami Cubans are, until recently, I haven't seen the polling in the last 6 weeks or so, but until recently, Miami Cubans are the only places since 2016, as this country has been, you know, set on fire, the only place where Trump's Q rating has improved is with Miami Cubans.
I mean, how could people understand that? But you think Masvidal is being used by the president? Do you think Masvidal knows he's being used by the president?
No.
No?
No. I think Masvidal believes what he is believing, and I believe that it's real as opposed to what it is with Covington. I believe he absolutely believes in it. I believe that he can't believe the position that he's arrived. This is so good for Jorge Masvidal's career, even as I feel like it makes him look like
from the streets like to campaigning with the president.
I mean, the whole thing, just the profile of his fights, everything. This is good for his business in an enormous, you can't pay for the advertising. He is being elevated. Man, Stugatz, I say this with zero ego. Masvidal was elevated by our show. What do you think the elevation is going to be when it's the president of the country? But what he's doing is downright dangerous. like what he is doing right now. Now, this is my viewpoint. It's dangerous what he's doing. I've told him so.
But does the promotion and the fact that it boosts his career and help his career, is that worth the exchange that he's making? And for most people, I would guess the answer is yes, right? Selfishly, it would be yes.
Not if you care about anybody, Stu. That's not if you care about the country. Not if you care about the. Not if you care about race. Not if you care about what's happening to freedom in this country.
Let me rephrase that. If you were on the streets years ago fighting, right, just trying to scratch together a career, take care of your family, perhaps, I'm guessing selfishly, most people would make the same decision.
He's already arrived, though, Stugatz. His last fight makes him for life. Like, he doesn't have to choose that, but that's what he believes. And but instead of getting into an argument that's going to end up dividing everybody and fist fighting, I suggest you watch the movie, and then you tell me what you think and whether or not you find anything about it illuminating or whether it helps shape this for you, because it's a little hard to explain how it is that Cubans arrive in a place where the thing that they value above all else is something they think Trump is protecting, which is freedom, as I'm looking at it. And I see freedom being jeopardized. I see it being threatened in a way that seems like overt and obvious in a way I've never seen in politics before, ever. Not even close. Nothing close to this is something that I've experienced in my lifetime.
And Dan, piggybacking off of what you were talking about with the 537 votes of Billy Corbin, I edit all the South Beach sessions, and I've already heard the Billy Corbin South Beach session. And coming from the lineage that I come from, which is a lot of the guys here on the show, we're programmed a certain way, right? And this, if you're a Miami Cuban and you understand the dynamics of what's at play here more than people that are listening and are on the outside looking in, this really challenges your viewpoints that you grew up with. And that's something interesting for me, because I've been programmed a certain way, and I've kind of gone away from that internal programming that my family has had, just because I've been learning more and I've been reading more and researching more. And stuff like this with Billy Corbin, he opens your eyes to different things that maybe you didn't think of.
This has been an incredibly trying time for a whole lot of people, and it's been a trying time inside of families, and it's been a trying time inside of my family. This stuff gets hand-me-down. Masvidal, I don't believe, has spent a lot of time thinking some of the things through that he is espousing. I believe when I asked him questions on South Beach Sessions that he did not have good answers for example, his affiliations with QAnon, supporting QAnon, which ended up in a situation beyond the absurdity of your political foes being pedophilia racket people, led by Satanism. Beyond that absurdity, it actually ended up, and this is why it's dangerous, when you start feeding that sort of stuff to an army of people who are not thinking for themselves, or not thinking straight for themselves, you end up in a situation where a guy is going armed into a pizza parlor, trying to get to a pizza parlor because he believes that Hillary Clinton is running a pedophile ring, and he's armed, and they stop him in the streets because, like, you get some of these situations that you have out here where people with weaponry are doing dangerous things. Like, that is the danger of, for example, Trump not denouncing QAnon, because he they're supporting him. They're supporting him, and he'll take any supporters. That's where we are. Trump, whether it's Masvidal, whether it's Covington, he will take, at this point, any supporters, because he's flailing, and you read all this stuff about the polling, although it was also true in 2016. And he somehow won. But you read all the stuff.
And he'll just take any supporters.
He's desperately, right. Desperately behind here. And he'll take whatever he can get. And Masvidal is giving him a boost. He is using his platform to give Trump a boost with Hispanics. Cody, you've been in Miami a long time. You have seen, you know this Cuban dynamic more than most people your age and more than most people of your heritage. You do what with what it is that you've learned over the last 40 years of watching what Miami is, Cuban-soaked and politically?
First, I want to say that the division within families is not unique to Cubans. I've experienced it within my own family. I am estranged from a nephew of mine and his wife over political divisiveness. And I said that to my wife just yesterday. But in terms of the how many in the Cuban community feel about Trump, I'm just wondering, I'm mystified to know why Trump equals freedom and why the Democrats somehow equal a threat to freedom. I can't make that connection. If you ask Masvidal, if you ask anybody you know who's just virulently pro-Trump, what is it about the Democrats that scare you? They would say what?
Greg, the easiest way to explain that to you is that wet foot, dry foot has always been protected by Republicans, and Democrats just normalized relations with Cuba. The Cubans benefit from a policy in America that Haitians and next to nobody else does. If we get to land here, we're protected. That's the issue. Like, to me, the story that Billy Corbin is telling is through Elian Gonzalez, the boy who came over, his mom died at sea, and he arrived here. And Americans thought he should go back home to his father, and Cubans thought, what the hell are you talking about? His mother died to get him to freedom. Keep him here. Republicans have done a better job of appearing to side with that. So much so that when you watch this 537 movie, you're going to see Gore break free of Clinton because he wants the Latin vote. You're going to see Gore break free of Clinton and support the idea of Elian staying here because he realizes how important the Latin vote is. And that issue trumps all else. I'm sitting there asking Masvidal questions about how do you not see the racial tensions that this president is stirring? How do you not see that he's obviously doing things that are dividing this country according to race? And Masvidal's thing is simply freedom. It's freedom at every turn. It's fear. It's what my elders have told me. Regardless, I would tell you to just watch the movie on HBO if you want to get sort of downloaded quickly on everything that is. I'm surprised you're asking me that, though, Greg. I thought that you would sort of know that.
I know that. I guess what mystifies me a little bit is the single issue aspect of many in the Cuban community. I get it, but I can't. That's something I can't relate to. I can't relate to being a single issue voter. I don't.
You sound terrible
on that one issue.
You sound terrible.
Well, you choked up.
You've cleared your voice like seven times during this. And right. what I would say to you is, would you be a single issue voter if you came from prison, you now had freedom outside of prison, and you feared going back to prison? You tell me. Like, because that's what the single issue is. The single issue
I'd
is.
I'd probably vote for me.
The single issue that Cubans are holding on to is valuing freedom because they come from the absence of it. The reason you have no connection to it and the reason a lot of Americans don't. I mean, a lot of Americans do, too, because we are filled with a country filled with immigrants and exiles. But I believe that Americans largely take freedom for granted, at least in part, because you don't know what it's like to come from a total absence of freedom, from people listening to your phone lines, from your neighbors keeping an eye on you, for being able to be jailed for 10 years for religious beliefs or beliefs in general. Like, you have to know what it is to come from that. And I don't. I do not. What I have learned from my elders, like Masvidal, is mine is borrowed. I'm all borrowed. This is all intellectual for me. It is not a pain that is mine. It is just a pain I have heard about. But I'm telling you that that's the source. That's what's at the source of what's happening with Cubans in this country.
Then what explains Cuban Americans, and I'm not going to include you in that, you speak for yourself, what includes Cuban Americans who are going to vote Democrat, who are anti-Trump, who feel all you might feel about the freedom and the right of Cubans to flee Cuba for their freedom, but yet with all that are still voting the other side?
I would imagine that what's happening there is what's happening all over our country, where people who leaned one way before now would tell you, wait a minute, enough is enough with what we've seen with this coronavirus and ignoring the science and just everything. Like, You get, I would imagine, I can't speak for all Cubans. I just know that the polling data says that most Cubans are not where you're saying they are. Some have broken free, but it's the same thing that you saw where women voted for Trump initially. And it was hard to understand. Like, the polling showed that women voted for Trump. And you're like, wait a minute, this starts with a scandal that is grabbing by the Like, that's where the scandal is starting. How could women be voting for that? And you see 4 years of leadership. You wanted change at one point. You wanted somebody who wasn't politics, who didn't feel like a politician, who was, you know, whatever, tell it like it is or not politically correct. And you thought you were getting an anarchist. Hell, Greg, at one point I was saying earlier this decade, it'd be fun to see Trump run just because I wanted an anarchist to knock out career politicians.
But now you want the, and now I think most people just want the country, Republican or Democrat, just to be represented the right way.
We're arguing about what can be done for others in the simplest way while arguing about masks. Chris Cody hit me with a barrage of questions during the break, Stugatz. All of them good questions. First of all, he was asking if it's okay to steal pens from restaurants. He was also asking whether or not we as a show are dressing up for Halloween. And he's got an objection that he wants to file with his neighborhood Mexican restaurant. So where would you like to start there? Where would you like to start among Chris Cody's questions and objections?
Stealing pens from a restaurant. I steal from hotels. I tend to leave the ones, you know, at the restaurant. But go ahead, Chris. Let's hear that.
Well, I just like, you know, so there's nothing like getting a great pen and at a restaurant where it just writes perfectly. It's got a great handle. And I just always wrestle with whether I'm like allowed to just, you know, throw it in my pocket and get out of there. Now, if it has the restaurant name in it, like if it's like a restaurant pen, then I feel like it's fair game. They kind of want you to steal it so you can, you know.
But where are you stealing it from after signing the check? Are you looking? Okay, so you're simply stealing. You're just.
Well, I'm just saying if I get my bill, like the little booklet with the bill to sign, and I sign the tip and I say to myself, wow, this is a delightful experience writing with this pen. Am I a bad human if I take that pen and just slip it in my pocket? Because you know these servers, they got a whole like little thing. They got a whole holster filled with pens. So I just don't feel like it's that big a deal.
They got a ton of backups. You're right. Here's where I would say I've stolen pens from a restaurant before. I was lying.
Bad ally for you to have is the defense of Stugatz here. But if don't tell me no, you're a bad ally to have on this subject.
Because Chris made a great point. If it's a traditional like big pen, it's not worth stealing, for me at least. But Flanagan's had the greatest pens of all time. Flanagan's would bring your check with a Flanagan's branded pen, and I would take it. It was green, it was thick, it was nice, it had the green color option because it's an Irish bar. I used to steal those every single time.
There's a simple rule of thumb in the pen theft kingdom, and it's this. If it's a major chain restaurant, you're free to borrow and never return the pen. If it's a little mom and pop restaurant, you leave the pen on the tip tray.
That's a good point.
I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I don't buy that.
I don't believe that that's a rule anyone is following. I think you just invented that rule.
If you go to the Broken Egg with Dickie V, right? That's a mom and pop diner, right? You go there, they have limited amounts of pens, right? You don't steal the pen from the Broken Egg. You sign your bill and you leave the pen on the table. I mean,
interesting take from Chris now in the middle of a major pandemic to be stealing pens that millions of other people have touched and bringing them to his house, right?
Good point.
And not cleaning them, yes. I want to marvel at a couple of different things here. First of all, Stugatz being such an obligatory liar that he just blurted in the front end, I don't steal pens, and then came back on the back end as an ally to Chris and an established liar to say
pens,
he
though,
does
man.
Steal pens. We know you steal pens. You don't have to say it. I mean, it was obvious to everybody. Like, it's not like you're governed by a moral compass very often, but I do want to make a distinction between the hotel pen and the restaurant pen, because I do believe the hotel pen is okay to take. I believe that the pen, if you want to throw that in your bag, because that the maid comes in and replaces it from her, you know, incredible collection of other pens.
I mean, you charge me for towels and make up some taxes about your property. Here's what I'm doing. I'm taking your pens, your soap, your towels, your robes. I'm taking it all.
Yes. Okay? Stugatz steals actively. The hotel that Stugatz stays in is happy if the bed is still there and the lamp, because Stugatz just stuffs things, including towels. That's straight thievery. Steal, taking the towels from a hotel is simply stealing.
I got like a great Four Seasons robe at home.
The robe. I think the robe, though, I think they'll end up figuring out a way to bill you if it's missing. Billy, do you have an opinion on this? Do you have an opinion on hotel pens, restaurant pens? Which one's stealing? Which one are you allowed to take?
Pens?
Yes.
You can take pens. They're not, and the little shampoos and stuff from hotels, you can take those too.
Right.
Because they're not going to reuse those, right? And the little notepads you can take. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, if there's like a little lamp that's not plugged in, you could take that.
What about
on the plate?
Billy, what about at a let's say you're at Chili's and you're signing your bill and the pen, it's not a Chili's pen. It's just a nice pen that maybe came from the waiter or waitress, but you just love it. Do you, like, no. Are you, is your
it needs
wife
to have allowed? A logo on it of the place that you're taking it from.
Bingo.
That is the distinction that Chris was making. I think Cody made a similar distinction. Yes, Greg.
Well, back in the day, upscale hotels would have beautiful heavy glass ashtrays in the room with a beautiful logo or monogram on them. I used to collect hotel glass ashtrays. I think at one time I had like a dozen of them. But, of course, you can't. Can you even get a smoking room now if you want one?
No.
I don't think you can, right?
No.
I miss those glass
ashtrays. Not in this country.
And you know the kind I mean. They weigh like 5 pounds each. They were beautiful.
You would steal them?
Oh, well, I didn't consider it stealing because I put them in the same category as pens and notepads.
Right.
No, but an ashtray is stealing. You're not even Why's a smoker. That? You're not even a smoker.
That's what's no, but later I developed a taste for cigars.
Yeah, but the time that you were traveling with business, at the time that you were traveling, you were not smoking cigars. You were absolutely True. Stealing ashtrays while not needing them for anything.
I thought of them as souvenirs, not mm-hmm. thefts.
Yep. Like a matchbook.
Yes.
Like Anki. Right. Mm-hmm. Like a matchbook, but heavier.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what is the bone to pick with your Mexican restaurant?
This, I feel, is the most obvious thing ever. There's not a single person that hears this that's going to disagree with this. When you get fajitas at a Mexican restaurant, give me enough sour cream and cheese. Okay, I'm tired of having to ask for the extra sour cream, the extra cheese. You give me way too much lettuce. You give me way too much pico, but there's never enough cheese and sour cream, okay? And one little pinch of cheese is not enough for my 4 fajita tacos, okay? you need to bring just more. Like, that's it. That's the take. More sour cream and cheese. They always have the exact same amount of sour cream, same amount of cheese, same amount of less. Like, put more cheese and sour cream, a little, like, that's it. That's the take.
All right, well, more is good, and I agree. Well, here's the thing about Mexican restaurants. Not only do they give you a limited amount of sour cream and cheese, you're right, they blend it with the lettuce and tomatoes. Do me a favor, separate all of it, all right? Send it in a separate container.
Mm-hmm.
Stop making me work so hard to put together a fajita. Mm-hmm. How about
that? My last fajita ends up just being like a bunch of lettuce on it because it's all I have left.
Yep.
Thank you, says Stugat.
That's annoying.
It's such a strange thing to thank you.
You guys don't know, like, who? Like, come on, Tony, you've ordered fajitas before, and you're like, what a ridiculously small amount of cheese they just gave me.
Chris, I've never ordered fajitas at a restaurant.
What?
Ever what? In my entire life.
You are not living life, my friend.
Put it on the poll. He's not a fajitas guy. Put it on the poll, please, Guillermo. Are you ever enraged by being given too little sour cream and cheese for your fajita?
There is no food you can order at a restaurant that you hear coming, Tony.
Yeah.
You hear it before you see it.
And Tony,
all of a sudden, oh, it's such a great feeling.
You haven't lived until a waiter is carrying over a flaming hot plate with smoke everywhere, okay? And you can hear it and you can smell it and you smell like it for days afterwards.
Oh, that's
you
great.
Have not lived life, Tony.
Well, there was one time that I heard something coming. It was when we were in Thailand, and I heard shrimp jumping off the plate that I was about to eat because Jesus. They were live. Yeah. So
I would have left that restaurant.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Has Tony lived life without having had fajitas? Finally, Chris's other question was about, are we dressing up for Halloween? He was very upset. By the way, not surprising at all in terms of takes. That Chris would want more sour cream and cheese. Like, that is absolutely something.
And less lettuce.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course.
And separate
it. I could see you just being enraged, running into the kitchen and drop kicking the chef because your last fajita has only lettuce on it because you wanted more sour cream and cheese. But Chris, many months ago, was worried about, are we going to get Halloween? And it seemed obvious that Halloween was going to get ruined, you know, like everything else has been ruined by the pandemic. But are we going to dress up for Halloween?
I mean, I guess. Why not? We could do it, right? Just because Halloween's ruined on the outside doesn't need, you know, doesn't mean it needs to be ruined on the inside here with the show. We could do something.
We could use Zoom backgrounds. It could be fun. I could be an astronaut, and then I could get this the space background, and then I could be floating around. Like, come on, man. I could have some fun with this.
You were John Gruden there for a second.
I'll tell you, man. I could be an astronaut, man. This is crazy. I used to work at Hooters.